Hey, everybody, this episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, a great man. And we have a conversation about BLM, critical race theory, Texas, and more as we are here from NRB. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to support us, go to charliekirk.com/support. And if you want to join us in Tampa, Florida, go to tpusa.com/SAS. Alan West is here. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? Quite a lot. Truth is, I know millions of people, in fact, that over 100 million people that are struggling with some kind of pain, whether it knee pain, back pain, joint pain, and exercise or getting older, or whatever it might be. I'm so impressed with the team at Relief Factor. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of commitment. So go to relieffactor.com. That's relieffactor.com or call 800-500-8384. About a dollar a day to see if you can get out of pain. And then after that, less than a cost of a cup of coffee a day. Relief Factor is terrific. It's 100% drug-free. Go to relieffactor.com. That's relieffactor.com. I want to start with this story, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, Alan. We have talked a lot about critical race theory here on this program, on how critical race theory is a scheme devised to try to teach our children to hate themselves and hate their country. And for far too long, parents have put up with these government schools imposing these sort of ideas on their children. That line has now been crossed. Parents are now rising up in record numbers in an organic and authentic and a way that I've never seen before in politics against critical race theory. And this kind of reached a boiling point last evening in Loudoun County schools right outside of Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C. You know that area quite well. And the scene was incredible. In fact, parents showed up to go oppose critical race theory. And if you see what's being taught at Loudoun County schools, that is just the beginning of the garbage and the filth that these children are being taught. This is one of the wealthiest counties in America, obviously, because of their proximity to Washington, D.C. Lobbyists and trial lawyers and kind of people that have access to the Washington machine are able to make a lot of money. And then they live in Loudoun County. In Ashburn, Virginia, parents began to protest against critical race theory right before the Loudoun County School Board met. Scott Mineo, who's the founder of critical race theory, talked to a crowd of about 200 people. This reached a boiling point last evening when all of a sudden the school board said no more public comment. Go to cut 52 or the school board choked off all discussion. Remember, these are the parents that are paying them to be there. Cut 52.
This board has a dark history of suppressing free speech. They caught you red-handed with an enemies list to punish opponents of critical race theory. You're teaching children to hate others because of their skin color, and you're forcing them to lie about other kids' gender. I am disgusted by your bigotry.
Joe Mobley to be followed by Donna Russell.
And then the Loudoun County Board ended up voting to end open comments. Cut 53.
Madam Chair, I move to end public comment. Motion made by Ms. Reeser and seconded by Ms. King. All in favor, please raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. The motion carries 9-0. Public comment is now ended. We will move to our next agenda item.
Not a shock that they want to cut off parents from being able to challenge them for what they're teaching or what they're doing. And it ended in a contentious outburst where one parent was arrested last evening at the Loudoun County School Board meeting for showing up and challenging critical race theory. So today in America, you can shoplift in San Francisco $500, $600, $700, and you will not be arrested or prosecuted. But if you go to your local school board meeting and dare say that you do not want your children to learn these pernicious and these evil ideas, they will use the police against you. Cut 55 of a parent getting arrested at the Loudoun County School Board.
This is an unlawful arrest. I have a First Amendment right.
That is a parent, a taxpayer, who has a child in the Loudoun County schools who is arrested for, I'm not really sure what they arrested him for, but he was speaking out of turn. Now, of course, if that actually applied to every single one of the campus activists that try to interrupt all of my speeches at Turning Point USA, there would be a prison of Alcatraz of people that would be arrested. But parents, they're trying to send a message to all of you. We just got an email from one of our friends in Grand Forks, North Dakota, where they said, hey, this is North Dakota, everybody. North Dakota, they are teaching critical race theory. In North Dakota, they are teaching children that America's a terrible country, that we should care about skin color, and that we should divide amongst ourselves based on things you cannot control. And one of these parents says, Charlie, what do I do? They are trying to send a message at Loudoun County Schools that if you stand up to this, you might actually be arrested. Alan, what are your thoughts on all of this?
Well, first and foremost, when you think about the basis of critical race theory, it is saying that you sitting here with me, that you are my oppressor and I am oppressed.
Do you feel oppressed, Alan?
No, I don't feel very oppressed, because, Charlie, I'm armed, so I'm not oppressed.
But I like that answer.
But the important thing you have to come to realize is that this undermines everything that I grew up knowing and studying, because I was born in the same neighborhood that produced Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He talked about a country where we would not look at people based upon the color of their skin, but the content of their character. But yet here we're going backwards. And really, before we got to critical race theory, here in South Lake, Texas, not too far from where we are in Grapevine, we had the precursor to critical race theory called the Cultural Competency Action Plan. And the parents there in South Lake stood up. They formed this thing called the South Lake Families Pact. And they understood the important thing was to win back the school board. And that's exactly what they did. Normally, in a municipal level election, you may have a turnout of 6%, maybe 7%. But in South Lake, Texas, in May of this year, they had a turnout of 41% in their municipal level elections because parents are waking up. Now, I want to share a quote with you. And one of the things that the military taught me, you always have your 3x5 cards, your little reference cards. And so here's a quote. The uncontested absurdities of today are the accepted slogans of tomorrow. They come to be accepted by degrees, by dint of constant pressure on one side and constant retreat on the other, until one day when they are suddenly declared to be the country's official ideology. That was written by Ayn Rand. And that's exactly what is happening here in the United States of America, where we have this new Marxism that is not based upon socioeconomic division. It is based upon racial division, but it still has the same purpose, is to divide this nation. And they're trying to do it upon this racial perspective. And so here we are about to celebrate the 245th anniversary of the United States of America. There are people that are teaching our children that America was not founded by the Declaration of Independence on July the 4th of 1776. It was founded in 1619 when a slave ship arrived. This is not just a revision of history. This is an elimination of history, because if you don't know from whence you came, you don't know where you are, and someone's going to dictate where you're going. And this is an effort to control the minds of the young people. It's no longer about education. It's about indoctrination. This is a serious threat to the fundamental of this country, foundation.
Hey, guys, you guys have heard me talk with my friend Kelly Shackelford before. Kelly Shackelford from First Liberty is a good person. Look, we've talked about court packing. It's the tool of left-wing authoritarians. Hugo Chavez packed Venezuela's Supreme Court with his socialist cronies and paved the way for his tyrannical regime. But now Joe Biden and American socialist radicals want to pack our Supreme Court with four new liberal justices. Court packing isn't some policy idea to improve our courts. It's a coup. A coup to take away your constitutional freedoms and turn America into a socialist country. That's why First Liberty Institute, the largest legal organization in the nation dedicated to defending religious liberty in America, is doing something about it. First Liberty recently launched SupremeCoup.com. That's SupremeCoup.com to serve as a one-stop shop in the fight against court packing and help patriots like you learn the truth about what's happening in the courts. But more importantly, there's a big take action button so you could do something to stop the Supreme Court coup. So do me a favor, support Kelly Shackelford in this and get involved
If you want to defend our God-given freedoms and stop the left's court-packing scheme, head over to SupremeCoup.com/Kirk. That's SupremeCoup.com/Kirk. SupremeCoup.com/Kirk.
So, Alan, we were talking about wokeness, critical race theory, and now generals and lieutenants, if I'm not mistaken, are being required to read Robin DiAngelo's White Fragility and then Ibram X. Kendi's How to Be an Anti-Racist.
Yes, they absolutely are.
Just before I go into the Committee to Support and Defend, which I think is terrific, what are we supposed to make of this?
Well, I will let's do a comparison. When I came into the United States military back in 1983, I was told I had to read Karl von Clausewitz's On War. I had to read Sun Tzu's The Art of War, all those different type of things. Those were the mandatory reading that I had to look at. But now today, we are telling officers, we're telling our senior enlisted that they have to read these books that go counter to the oath that they take to support and defend the Constitution. To the point where now we have a military officer that was in the Space Force that was relieved of command because he spoke out against Marxism. Now, last time I checked, Marxism is antithetical to the Constitution of the United States of America, which we take an oath to support and defend. Or you even have a chaplain down in Fort Hood, Texas, who on his own personal social media account was speaking out against transgenderism in the military, but he was brought up under investigation. These things are very disconcerting to me because we're undermining the core foundation and fabric of the United States military, which is that we take an oath to a constitution, not a political party, not an ideology, not a person. But yet it seems that now they're trying to force the military to take an allegiance test to a certain ideology, which resembles the old Soviet army.
So, Alan, why are we putting up with this? I mean, who's in charge? Who are making these decisions? This is the military that we are now treating as if they are social justice activists.
Well, they're doing that because the military falls under the civilian control. And so, therefore, the president of the United States of America also carries the title of commander in chief. And then you also have a secretary of defense who is the person in charge of all of the policies and procedures and operating processes of the military. And he has his staff, which is above the uniform members of the military. And so you don't have the opportunity for folks to just refuse or to start a coup or something like that. That's not what we do. And you have to be concerned when you have this countering extremism working group. They have individuals that are radical in some of their experiences and their backgrounds now trying to determine what's radical in the military. Case in point, when Nadal Hassan, just right down the road here in Fort Hood, Texas, in December of 2009, shot and killed 13 soldiers and Army civilians and wounded another 31, the administration at the time called that workplace violence, even though he said he was a soldier of Allah, shouting Allahu Akbar. But yet now it seems that if you have an ideological bent that is different from progressive socialism or this secular humanism or this wokeism, a council culture, the military is going to come after you. They're going to surveil you on your own personal platform, social media platforms.
Has this ever happened before in American history?
No, it has not. And like I said, I served 22 years in the military. My older brother served. My father served in World War II. You know, no.
So you have the people that have the most amount of physical power, literally missiles and the capacity to invade and destroy any nation, the strongest fighting force the world has ever seen, that are now being forced to become the equivalent of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah, basically what is being said is that, you know, we want you to succumb to a certain type of ideological thinking. And if you have an ideological thinking that is different from that, we're going to surveil you. We're going to look at your social media platforms. We're going to force you to read these type of the books or what have you. You know, even here at the Texas State Guard and the Texas National Guard, they just recently had a briefing about countering extremism in the military. And one of the things that they brought up and said, you could be considered an extremist if you're a member of the National Rifle Association.
Yeah, but this is Texas. The governor's putting up with that?
Seems somehow that policy has been implemented even here. So we've got a big concern for the people in the United States of America should understand that their military is there to support and defend the Constitution. And it is not about any type of ideological perspective.
Are the rank and file of the military putting up with this? Are they angry about this?
They're very upset. They're very angry about that. But the problem is that they don't have the ability to stand up and speak out against.
But who does? A senator, a congressman?
Your senators and congressmen, and then also the people such as myself that are retired. And that's why we put out this petition and this letter from the Committee to Support and Defend.
It's Committee to Support and Defend. As former members of the U.S. military who have proudly served our nation, we have signed this letter to express our support for constitutional freedom and liberty, and our concern for our country as many powerful forces seek to bring socialism and Marxism to our land. Please join us and support us in our constitutional values and freedoms we fought to preserve. This is one of the ones that I just hope people stop and realize how far this virus literally has infected.
It's a cancer.
It really is. Mm-hmm. If they take over the military, that's something that we've never really.
Well, if you think about the old Soviet army used to have the political officers, the commissars, mm-hmm. and we don't want to see that happen in our military.
You may have heard that I'm recently married. Every married man knows that while it's the greatest gift, it's also a big change. I'm joyfully adjusting all the habits I formed as a single man, all the way down to my sleep schedule. One part of this married man's routine will remain exactly the same. You want to know what it is? Every night before going to bed, I still take 2 capsules of Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. Don't get me wrong, I'm not taking any old generic synthetic magnesium pills. I only take Magnesium Breakthrough. Why? Well, simply put, there are 7 unique forms of magnesium. By leveraging all 7 forms in each capsule, I'm able to experience magnesium's deep, restorative sleep benefits. If you're having trouble falling asleep or staying asleep, try magnesium in your nightly regimen and be amazed by how much healthier your sleep patterns become. For an exclusive offer to the Charlie Kirk Show listeners, go to magbreakthrough.com. That's magbreakthrough.com/Kirk. And then use the promo code Kirk10 during checkout to save 10%. Or Google Magnesium Breakthrough and Bioptimizer should be your first search result. Don't forget Kirk10 to save on your order or use the link in the description or pinned comment to get your discount.
I want to just respond to one email that we got here at freedom@charliekirk.com. This is going to be their new tactic to use to try to say that there's nothing to see here. So they say critical race theory is not being taught in these schools. That is a very difficult to understand legal theory. That would be like saying, well, advanced physics is not being taught to fourth graders, but physics is still being taught to fourth graders. They've taken the big ideas of critical race theory mm-hmm. and they've been able to, let's say, distill them down for third, fourth, and fifth graders. Here's how to know if these ideas are being taught. Is your third, fourth, and fifth grader being taught at all about race? That's it. That's the answer. If they're being taught about white privilege, equity, or skin color. You know, I grew up in an America. It was really nice, Alan. It was 10 years ago, where I went to a high school in the suburbs of Chicago, 53% English as a second language. I was a minority as a white Anglo-Saxon Christian male in my own high school. Mm-hmm. Mostly was Hispanic. I knew more illegal immigrants than I knew Christians in my high school. And that's just the culture I grew up in. And I could tell you no one cared about skin color. Mm-hmm. My best friends were black or Hispanic and from Asia. And there might have been 1 or 2 politically incorrect jokes that some people would say every so often. But it was never, ever in the terms of trying to marginalize people. And if anyone ever had hatred in their heart towards another based on race, there was no tolerance for that.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to say I went to school in utopia. But it was a really healthy way to try to tell people, we don't care how you look. We care what's within your spirit or your soul and your character. It's now been completely reversed. And this is their new deflection tactic, saying, well, that's not being taught. It's only being taught in law school. No, this sort of KKK ideology, and that's what we should call it. It's not CRT. It's KKK ideology. And now it's in our military.
Yeah. And you think about it, in the military, when you go into combat, like where I was 30 years ago in Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, you don't care about a guy's skin color. You care about one thing. Are you going to fight? When the bullets start flying, are you going to be there? Do you have my back? And that's it. But now all of a sudden, if we are bringing in this sense of racial divisiveness that says that, you know, this guy in the foxhole next to me, he's my oppressor. You're creating a division. At the most basic level with your battle buddy.
So let me ask you a question. What do you say is the mission of the United States military?
The mission of the United States military is to fight, deploy, and win the nation's wars. That's it. That's what we're told. We're supposed to train, we're supposed to be ready, and we're supposed to answer the call.
So in what world does How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram X. Kendi, who, by the way, Ibram X. Kendi is a very bad person.
Yeah.
He's an evil racist. and he hates white people, and he wants to create a sort of America where anyone who is white has to atone indefinitely and be punished for something they can't control. How does that help the mission of the military?
It does not help the mission of the military. And so in other words, when we have a military that should be out there focused on being trained and equipped and ready to do the nation's business, when you look at the enemies that we face, being it Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, or Islamic jihadism, instead of us going in and sitting down and having these sessions where we're supposed to read these books about not being a racist, that's taken away from the training time that you have. And I understand that, having been a former commander.
And so one of the quotes from Ibram X. Kendi, I want to make sure I find it here, is that the solution to prior discrimination, here's what it is. He says, the defining question is whether discrimination is creating equity or inequity. If discrimination is creating equity, then it is anti-racist. If discrimination is creating inequity, then it is racist. He says, the solution to prior discrimination is present discrimination. That is Ibram X. Kendi.
Well, let me explain something to everybody that's out here listening to me talk. In 1961, I was born in a blacks-only hospital in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, how does a kid born in the South in a blacks-only hospital 60 years ago rise up to become a lieutenant colonel in the United States Army, command a battalion of 600 when his dad was only a corporal in the Army that served in a segregated army, rise up to become a member of the United States House of Representatives to represent a congressional district that was 93% white? And oh, by the way, there's a little house in the congressional district that I represented down in Florida. The house is called Mar-a-Lago. The president, Donald Trump, was one of my constituents. I had the opportunity to sit down and have dinner with Rush Limbaugh on three different occasions. He was one of my constituents. And now how is it that a kid born in a blacks-only hospital in Atlanta, Georgia, 60 years later, is now sitting here before you, and I am the chairman of the largest state Republican Party in the United States of America? See, it's not about this equity thing. Equity means the forced implementation of equality of outcomes. America is about equality of opportunity. If we continue to allow people to beat our kids down and say that you are relegated to being a victim, relegated to being oppressed, and you're relegated to always being seen as an oppressor, we will never live up to be the true nature of what we were intended to be as these United States.
And so, Alan, do these people who are implementing it, do they mean well?
No, they don't mean well.
That's a hard thing for some people to recognize.
Well, I'm sorry. I mean, you know, when we took the oath to support and defend the Constitution, we said against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And that's exactly what we see happening.
It's a harsh and tough reality to accept. But I've said for quite some time, the conservative movement will win and we will be united the moment we stop saying the following. We all want the same thing. We have different ways of getting there. We don't want the same thing as these people. They want to have an America where we care about skin color. They want to have an open border America. I'm going to ask you about that in a second. Mm-hmm. They want to have an America where a million abortions a year is perfectly acceptable. They want to have an America where there is no more women's sports.
But don't say abortion, because you're buying into their language. What we're talking about is murdering unborn babies.
I'm right there with you.
You abort a mission in the military. This is murder of unborn babies. And so we can't accept that.
I will be happily corrected. It's a great saying that we say here on the Charlie Kirk Show. A wise man loves to be corrected, because you always want to replace error with truth. So I agree with you. Texas, Senator Harris, Kamala, Cammie. She's going down to the border soon. You might have just heard about this news. You're the chairman of the Republican Party here in Texas. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's very interesting that finally the vice president's going to come down here. I think this is a precursor to the fact that we know that the former president is going to come down here to the border next week. We're facing an incredible crisis here in Texas. And understand this, you're sitting in the state that is the number one state in the United States of America for human and sex trafficking. You're sitting here in a city that is either first or the second. It's either Houston or Dallas, top two cities in the United States of America for human and sex trafficking. But yet we have allowed the implementation of an open borders policy, which is undermining the sovereignty of this country and the sovereignty of the state of Texas. You are witnessing a constitutional crisis, because I would have never thought there would be a federal government, an administration that would abdicate, completely disregard their constitutional duty and responsibility to protect these people. To the point where we're sitting here in Dallas, Texas, and not too far away, the K. Bailey Hutchison Convention Center, there are 3,000 to 4,000 legal immigrant males that are being brought into that convention center and then being slowly released.
Are they illegal?
Illegal. Yes.
That's right near the Omni Hotel, isn't it?
That's right downtown Dallas.
I know exactly where that is. And so what is going on in Texas? There's been a lot of rumblings about the state wants to govern itself. And I get emails from people all the time that say, "What I feel as if San Francisco is moving into North Dallas." This has kind of become the center of energy in the country.
Yeah, it has. And so goes Texas. So goes the nation. And Texas is on the front lines. Texas is without a doubt the tip of the spear. And that's why the Lone Star illuminates the other 49 on the American flag. And what you see happening is really the blueprint of what the progressive socialist left has done all across the United States of America, especially now look at my home state of Georgia. You get people that move into certain major urban population centers and they're controlled by the left. And the next thing you know, based upon population, they overtake that entire state. And so when you look at Georgia, Atlanta, Savannah, Macon, Augusta, and Columbus, those five areas were the reason why now you have two socialist senators from the state of Georgia. And we cannot allow that to happen here in the state of Texas. So I think that Texas is going to stand up on its Judeo-Christian faith heritage. Texas is going to stand up and understand its constitutional responsibility based upon Article 10 of the Constitution, 10th Amendment, I'm sorry, of the Constitution, which says that all those powers not delegated to the federal government are reserved to the states and to the people. And that's so important for our states to realize is that free and independent states created these United States of America. And we cannot allow the federal government to usurp the power that the states have. Yesterday, you just saw an instance of that trying to nationalize elections. States have the enumerated power to conduct elections in the United States of America, not the federal government.
The states created the federal government. The federal government did not create the states. The states were there before. The states should have their ability to govern themselves. We say a lot, I know you believe this in Texas, the states have way more power than these governors and these legislators realize. And they are intimidated and bullied by the federal government far too often. And what is needed, what's been missing, is a coalition of states. Mm-hmm. Is to have, you have 27 Republican states that come together and all of a sudden they come up with their own name and say, we're the freedom states. And if you investigate one of us, you investigate all of us.
Well, and the interesting thing is that when you had the blue states come up with the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, which was just basically them trying to come together, 15, 16 states, to undermine the Electoral College. And you heard nothing about people, you know, speaking to, and addressing that. So
Alan, I want to ask you about the Hope Center.
It's great.
Tell me about it.
The Hope Center is unlike anything else in the United States of America and like anything else in the world. You have 185,000 square foot campus that houses 60 different Christian ministries, all working together to spread the gospel of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And when you think about how our Judeo-Christian faith heritage is under assault, the fact that, you know, one of the first things that people tried to shut down in COVID was our churches. We need to bring our Christian ministries together so they can collaboratively work together, not be in stovepipes, so that we can project the strength. And I'll give you a great case in point. First Liberty is one of our ministries. Christians Engage.
Kelly Shackle.
Yeah, Kelly Shackle. Christians Engage just got denied their 501c3 status by the IRS. Guess where Christians Engage went to? They came into the Hope Center. They went to the First Liberty, which is the preeminent defender of religious liberties and freedoms in the country.
185,000 square feet.
185,000 square feet, 60 plus Christian ministries.
How big of events could you do there?
We can hold, we had 500 people for our National That's Day awesome. Of Prayer. We can hold 450 people for a dinner type of event.
So the hopecenter.org.
Hopecenter.org. Come by and visit us and see us there.
We just got asked this question. What do I do? What do I do? I feel as if there's this cultural blitzkrieg. What do I do? Alan, I'm starting to see people start to stand up and fight back.
Yeah.
Does it remind you of the Tea Party energy back in 2010?
Yeah, it really does. And you know, we just said hey to Jack Phillips, who is the baker out in Colorado.
He is an awesome guy. Yeah, I want to have him on. By the way, they just sued him again.
Yeah, I know. But the thing is that's what you need. You need those examples of courage. And again, I'll come back to what we just saw happen here in Southlake, Texas, where they had the cultural competency action plan and those families came together and it was at a church. And that's why I think it's so important that the church gets involved. I mean, we hadn't talked about that a lot. We've been talking about schools, but the churches and pastors got to stand up. And so they met in the church. They had over 300 people there and they created what is called the Southlake Families Pack. And they dedicated themselves to winning back school boards and winning back city council seats and getting Christian constitutional conservatives in these positions so that they can make sure that our kids are being educated and not indoctrinated. So I think it has to start at the local level. And too often we have not focused on the local level like we should, city council, school board races.
And we're starting to see more and more parents do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so what else can people do? Because it seems as if the left is organized, they're motivated, and they try to always have the moral high ground. What else can people do?
Well, I think also it's about informing and educating yourself. Inform these smaller groups that can talk about these issues and make sure that when you go to these school board meetings that you understand your rights, you understand what you're able to do, and stop allowing, you know, people to do exactly what we saw there in Loudoun County, is to shut down your voice. And, you know, meet with your police chief and say, hey, you know, you should not be arresting us for our First Amendment rights. You have to have that moral sense about you so that you don't enjoin yourself to this.
So in closing, I want to ask you about something that we were joking about earlier, masculinity and fatherhood.
Yes.
We have the weakest men our country has ever seen since our foundation and formation. We have a hyper-feminized agenda in our school system and in mass media. How do we create strong men?
Well, again, this is one of the purposeful intents from the progressive socialist left. And one of the ministries that we have at the Hope Center is called Abiding Fathers, which tries to get men to step up and do as God would have us to abide within the Heavenly Father so they can be good, strong earthly fathers. You know, when I was born in 1961, two-parent household in the Black community was 77%. Today it's 24%. And why did that happen? Because a president of the United States of America from the state of Texas,
Lyndon Baines Johnson,
Great Society programs, and he rewarded women for having children out of wedlock. We got to get fathers back in the homes. This is another place where churches can play an important role, and that's why we love that ministry, Abiding Fathers. And we've got to show these young men in these inner cities, urban centers especially, that don't have fathers. We got to get them out of these conditions where they see gangs, they see, you know, looting, they see all the criminality, and we got to show them a better way. But we've got to, once again, have men that stand up and teach young men how to be men.
I totally agree with that.
That's what it's all about. Not be afraid.
Men have to hold men accountable.
Absolutely.
And if you impregnate a woman and you abandon that woman and you are not there daily and hourly to help raise those children, you should be called out for that. You should be condemned, and it should be
not celebrated.
No, not celebrated or even accepted. You should be called out and say, you're a coward. Like, how dare you do something like that? Go back and take ownership and take responsibility. We need to create a social stigma outside of public policy around this idea of men walking away from their decisions.
You know, one of the things I would say, maybe, you know, I get in trouble for saying this, but it's
the
truth.
Sort of statement.
We should not be elevating George Floyd as some role model in the Black community. Okay. It was sad. It was tragic what happened to him. But to put him up on walls and billboards and all of this and try to make him into this hero, to have a flag draping over his coffin, like the flag draped over the coffin of my dad, I took offense to that. And so we have got to stop elevating these people that are failures in masculinity, failures in fatherhood. And we got to start looking at the right type of role models.
A repeat criminal offender who was taking drugs and that might have
pointed a handgun at the belly of a pregnant woman.
And that is who Nancy Pelosi thanks for dying for their power grab. You learn about the history of George Floyd, all of a sudden you might take the red pill, not the blue pill, and get closer to truth. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support our program, go to charliekirk.com/support. Thanks so much, everybody. God bless.